This is Fresh Air. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen. This Sunday marks the 50th anniversary of the dropping of the first atomic bomb. Hiroshima, and then 3 days later Nagasaki, were the targets of the bombing, which destroyed major parts of both cities, killing an estimated 200,000 people. 150,000 more were left sick and injured, some with lifelong debilitating effects. The physical toll of the devastation was apparent, but what wasn't clear were the effects on pregnant women, babies in utero, and children who survived. What about their health and development? That was the question that brought James Yamazaki to Japan in 1949. For 2 years, he was the lead physician in charge of the U.S. government's Atomic Bomb Casualty Commission assigned to Nagasaki. James Yamazaki's parents had emigrated from Japan shortly after the turn of the century and had raised their children in California. Yamazaki fought with the U.S. Army during World War II, while at the same time his parents were imprisoned in an internment camp in Arkansas. Yamazaki has written about his life and about his work in Nagasaki in a book entitled Children of the Atomic Bomb. He is currently clinical professor of pediatrics in the School of Medicine at the University of California. Yamazaki described what Nagasaki looked like 4 years after the bombing.
The part of the town where I lived was shielded by the mountains so that there was no visible damage. Whatever damage that had occurred, and they report that there was some, there was not a house that wasn't received some sort of damage from the blast and the heat. But the section of the valley where the bomb dropped was still, there's a widespread evidence of the ruins. Right in the center, within 500 meters were schools where still the damage was observable. Medical school was still a skeleton, had been burned out, and was a concrete building. All of the wooden structures were destroyed within 1,000 meters, or even within a mile, really, and mile radius. And how did they live, you may question? Is that there was a doctor, a radiologist, who lived on a hill, a member of the faculty of the medical school. He lived in a little shack, just wide enough to for him to live, to sleep, and his two children, and a little side section where he could prepare his meals. And the outside was made out of the scavenged material, and there was a little window that let in the light. This was a kind of dwelling that was common in that area on the hillside.
How many people, and I guess this is this took some time to figure out, how many people died from the dropping of the bomb over Nagasaki?
It is estimated around 70,000.
And these were people right in the epicenter for the most part?
Within the area of a 1 mile radius, yes. About 1.5 mile radius. Mm-hmm.
Has anybody been able to sort of reconstruct what it was like then to be in the epicenter?
Yes. There are people who were in the epicenter that are alive. The Japanese report described in a very graphic way what happens in incremental distance from the hypocenter. If you are right at the hypocenter, that is the point above the ground, on the ground above which the bomb exploded 500 meters above. And there, if you were in that general area, you would be incinerated.
What's the heat there?
Oh, several thousand degrees, enough to make the tiles bubble, the surface of the tile bubble. And as you go further out, there will be increasing, the body would be burned in various degrees into deeper tissues of the body. And then, say, about at 1,000 meters, it would be sufficient to char the skin, and it would have a lethal effect. At 4,000 meters, 4 kilometers, that would be about 2 miles out, you would still get flash burns, so that would be a like a sudden sunburn, but not enough to injure you and nothing, and you could recover very well from that. But enough to char the, perhaps leave a burn mark on a telephone post or something of this sort.
For those people that were in the epicenter and felt the full effect of the bomb, how were they able to survive?
Well, this one little girl, she happened to, just prior to the bomb, she recalled a little piece of candy she left in the air raid shelter, which many of the homes had dug in the floor of the house. And she just happened to go after her candy at that time and was able to survive because she was surrounded by this shelter.
Does that mean that she had no burns?
She was in under the ground, you see.
Okay, so that the heat was not able to penetrate where she was.
That's right, yes.
Most people then died either of burns or from radiation, is that right?
And the trauma. The blast is a terrific force, and it's a blast wind of hurricane speed, so that any loose object or any object that can be shattered, such as glass, become a flying missile, so that you can imagine in a tremendous hurricane of tremendous heat all coming in at the same time. That the thermal radiation comes in at the speed of light, so it's an instant burn, and the wind follows soon after, so that if your skin is burned, the clothing is burned, it's blown off, and if you're far enough away and survive, the skin is just hanging from you in sheets.
What are the effects of radiation sickness?
You get bleeding in the skin, a certain type of little pinpoint or larger black and blue spots that indicates that there is bleeding. The blood vessels are injured to the extent that you will have bleeding in the skin. The other is the one other sign is that there's a loss of hair that occurs in a very short period, within a week or so. And then the third is the considerable outer injury to the lining of the mouth and throat with the bleeding and ulcerations.
And I assume there was the problem of residual radiation. I don't know how long radiation stayed in Nagasaki.
Yes, that was a considerable concern, not only of the people in Japan, but of the armed forces. When would it be safe for the occupying units of the armed forces to come into Nagasaki and Hiroshima?
Was anyone able to figure out the answer to that?
Oh, yes. The Japanese immediately began to measure the radiation doses. And one of the first thing assignments of the Los Alamos group, the Manhattan Project, was headed by Dr. Stafford Warren, was to bring with them all the measuring equipment of radiation monitoring equipment they could obtain in the country to bring to Japan, and to measure how much radiation was left on the ground or actually induced by the radiation in the ground, so that there would be no hazard for the occupying forces. And so by September 25th, that's almost a little over a month, after careful surveys, including the area around Nagasaki and further out, they were able to say that there was remaining radiation, which they called residual radiation, was of a amount that would not be harmful to the occupying forces.
You came to Nagasaki in 1949 to do studies and to provide medical care and
no, we were not there to do medical care. We were not licensed to care. There were Japanese doctors who could care for their own.
Okay.
And as in this country, we need to be licensed to care in their requirements.
Oh. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Well,
our government did not provide. Was not that was not the function of our group to provide care. That was one of their complaints also.
That they wanted you to provide care.
Yes.
Yeah.
They thought we had drugs that would be effective and that could help them to ease their after effects.
You were interested in looking at the effect of the dropping of the bomb on pregnant women and their developing babies. What was your interest in this aspect of the research?
We were asked to submit studies before we went to Japan, and I knew nothing of radiation, so it just happened at the Children's Hospital in Cincinnati, where I was, a doctor by the name of Joseph Warkney, who eventually was regarded as the authority on male development during pregnancy. And he had conducted a small study of the radiation effect in animals, because there had been studies that incidental radiation to the pregnant women for cancer resulted in children with neurological problems such as mental retardation, the abnormality of a small head, and stunted growth. The findings had been documented, so that in talking with the doctors at the Children's Hospital, they thought that this may be something that should be looked at in Japan. And so they prepared me to see how such a studies could be conducted in the year before I went to Japan.
Now, by the time you got to Nagasaki in 1949, any mother who had been pregnant while or during the dropping of the bomb, if that baby had survived, the baby would be 3, maybe 4 years old.
That's right.
How many children did you look at?
Of the survivors that were close by, there were 98.
Okay, so you looked at 98.
And those
children
who were at a distance that were where we thought would be the minimal injury were a similar number, about over a little 100. To see what the difference would be between the two groups.
What would you say, then, was the effect of the radiation, the burn, the blast on a developing fetus? What did you see as these then young children came into your office?
We, of course, we were looking at what happened to these pregnancies, and we looked at how many miscarriage and the stillbirth, and how many children died soon after birth and how many died during the first year, in comparing the two groups. And we found that there was 5 times the fetal and the infant death compared to the control group.
And for those children that survived, did you see differences there as well? Differences either in development, in retardation?
Yes, of those that survived, there was about a fourth of them had stunted growth. That's the height and the weight were retarded, as well as the head size. And among those who were in this group, about a fourth of them showed the small head size or were mentally retarded.
And how were these mothers coping with these babies, these young children? Because clearly they had been through the bomb blast and had to deal with their own physical condition, physical health.
Yes. At that time, of course, many of the mothers afterwards succumbed. And so some of them were being raised by grandmothers, and they would try to tell us the story. So that would not be a firsthand information. At that time, they were unaware, and we were not aware, whether this was all due to the blast or whether this was the natural course of any mother who might have had a miscarriage or a stillbirth or infant born that might die in the first year. So they were not clear in their minds that this was the effect of the bomb. Well, it may have been at that time a part of the natural course of of a pregnancy in wartime. And on the other hand, we felt a responsibility that at some time in the future, the parents had to be appraised of our findings.
My guest is pediatrician James Yamazaki, who was head physician for the Atomic Bomb Casualty Commission in Nagasaki. More after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to pediatrician James Yamazaki talking about the effects of the atomic bomb on the children of Nagasaki. There's another whole, chapter of your life that I would like to explore. You're Japanese-American. Your parents were both born in Japan. They came to the States. You describe your father as a particularly, extraordinarily patriotic man. He seemed to really love the United States, encouraged you and your brothers to enlist in the Army, and wanted very much to be part of American society. And ironically, while you and your brothers were in the armed forces, your family, the rest of your family, was forced into internment camps. I'm curious about the effect of that on your family.
Well, my father felt that we were part of America, though we weren't, didn't have quite the background of the Pilgrims. He felt that we were, that after the war we would still be here, and that in order to have any say afterwards, we would have to participate in the war effort the same way any other family did, and that if the neighbor next door's son went to the Army, we would still, if we did the same thing when we returned, we would have a firmer ground to say we were part of this country.
But were you able, while you were in the Army, to put behind you or even outside of your consciousness, this fact that you were fighting for your country and your country had just imprisoned your family for being Japanese, of Japanese descent?
Well, there's, you just don't have one feeling. Having gone to combat and seen the tremendous attrition of life, actually dismemberment of bodies that you witness, survival is an extremely important thing. So when I came home, when I was on the battlefield, I felt a little stronger than the other person, I think. I was the only Oriental in my division. And so that I felt that I was inured to many of life's to life, I guess, because of my experience, the racial animus of that we faced in before the war.
Was your loyalty ever in question, ever doubted?
No, I don't think so. I received my commission just a week before Pearl Harbor, and being aware, unlike what the president says, all during our teenage life, we were afraid that there was this increasing animosity between the two countries. And before Pearl Harbor, just a few months before, when the embargo was placed, it was a very chilling effect on me. And so when there was a, because the embargo was on steel and oil, and we knew that that was factor in preventing and the war machine in China. And so soon as there was a bulletin saying that we could apply for a commission, I was in medical school then, I immediately put in an application, and my commission is dated November 25th, and my commission just arrived about the time of Pearl Harbor.
Was your family embittered at all by the fact that they were interned?
We were surrounded by people that lost their homes, their livelihood, everything they had, and all they could bring them was their personal effects in little suitcases. And I think that is something that many people still can't get over. My feeling, and I shared it with them, of course, and I couldn't go home to help my people evacuate to the camps because there was regulations about return going into this area. And when I came home from overseas, and especially as in the months afterwards, we learned of what happened at Dachau and in Leningrad and elsewhere, the tremendous loss of life everywhere with this war, I was very glad that our family was still alive, because I felt that we're all the human families, and what happened in Germany could have easily happened to us in the United States. There certainly were episodes of what they called the Yellow Peril, the Jap baiting they called in those days, and we knew of the history of the lynching in this country, that the racial things could heat up to the point where life is endangered any time. And this human behavior of aggressiveness could be turned on any group.
Pediatrician James Yamazaki, his memoir is entitled Children of the Atomic Bomb. I'm Marty Moscoane, and this is Fresh Air.